dominant firms are becoming entrenched. And when this is happening, their competitors are pushed back in terms of their active participation in the economy. What does that mean? It means that exactly at the time we need more dynamism in the economy, we may have less and less policy makers act. And I'm very eager to hear from two champions of level playing field, dynamic competition, Senator Klobuchar and my very, very dear friend from the European Commission, Margrethe Vestager.
I have a very healthy respect for capitalism and believe that we need to unleash the power of capitalism and innovation to make this work. You can have highly successful companies that go along and do really well for a long time. But at some point, and this is why Adam Smith, the godfather of American capitalism, in his Wealth of Nations, warned about the unbridled power of what he called the army of monopolies, and that at some point, a company gets so big that it starts squelching innovation.
And as Amy said, it's great when a company is successful. And success is a new thing in a digital marketplace because you have marginal costs approaching zero, you have network effects, you have, you know, a completely different dynamic in that marketplace. So we found that it's important to say with success comes power. With power comes responsibility.
I would like to note that Marguerite was very, very close to quoting the Spider-Man movie. With great power comes great responsibility.
So that was U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar, along with the Executive Vice President of the European Commission, Margrethe Vestager, and of course, Kristalina Georgieva, IMF Managing Director, before that. They were all speaking at an event hosted by the Brookings Institution and Bruegel on declining competition, where they discussed new IMF research that puts part of the blame on rising corporate market power, a trend that Senator Klobuchar says U.S. entrepreneurs have been battling for a long time.
We are a country of entrepreneurs. Americans are fiercely independent. Our whole country started because people were fleeing the monopolies of England. They came for freedom of politics and freedom of speech and freedom of religion, but they also came to be entrepreneurs. And so that is deep ingrained in the American spirit and was continued on through the centuries when farmers stood with pitchforks in the Midwest, objecting to monopolies in ag and transportation and rail, or the union movement came up in places like Chicago because of robber barons and the like. And literally every American can trace their story back to some kind of economic explosion over monopolies. And so people realize what's going on, and it's up to us as leaders to take this on.
Welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. I'm Bruce Edwards. And in today's program, we look at what's behind the recent rise in corporate market power with the lead author of the new IMF study.
So I'm Romain Duval. I'm from the research department of the IMF, and I run a group there that focuses quite a lot on so-called structural issues. So productivity, labor markets, product markets are our main focus.
So monopolies have always frustrated workers and entrepreneurs trying to break into markets, not to mention consumers. But if there's ever been a time when big firms have actually stepped up to provide crucial services in terms of technology and vaccines, it's now. What prompted you to look into this issue of corporate market power in this context of the global pandemic?
Well, actually, the rise in market power, you know, is not a new phenomenon. It's a phenomenon that we observed over many decades prior to the pandemic, and that's connected to a number of macroeconomic puzzles. You know, we've seen slow productivity growth. We've seen skyrocketing asset prices while the market value of firms' productive capital has remained much more stable. We've seen stable rates of return on private capital, even though safe asset returns have declined over time, right? The returns on government bond rates. We've seen declines in labor income shares. And all of these are puzzles for which there's other explanations than the rise in market power. But the rise in market power is one of them. And it's an explanation that can potentially actually speak to each of these puzzles. Now, regarding the pandemic itself, what our new research shows is that it could accelerate this trend toward increased product market power. And that's for two reasons. One is we're seeing, or we are about to see, a pickup in bankruptcies of small and medium enterprises. That's right. Because they have, you know, thinner cushions, less access to credit lines and smaller profits than larger firms. And therefore, they're going to be more subject to bankruptcies, which is mechanically going to lead to increased market concentration. And the other reason is one you observe maybe more anecdotically on a daily basis, which is in the tech sector in particular, you see that the large tech firms are emerging among the main winners. Even in industries, in those few industries that are gaining from the pandemic, like tech, you see big players as the big winners.
But there are existing antitrust laws in many countries, especially in the U.S. and in Europe. Where do you see those laws or the implementation of those laws falling short?
Well, you know, what we see in the last few decades is that looking across listed firms in advanced economies, we estimate that their price to marginal cost ratio, which is called price markup, have increased on average by about 1/3, right? And in the information communications and technology industry, the rise has been steeper than the average rise. And this has come along with increased market concentration, increased profit rates. So all of these, you know, this array of indicators tells you that even though we have strong antitrust laws, something, you know, must not have gone quite right. Right. And we need to fix that issue. Otherwise, we shouldn't be seeing, you know, such a persistent rise in market power and also a broad-based rise that you see across an array of indicators. And also a further thing that's a cause for concern is that, you know, market power can be the reward for successful firms, right? You innovate, you become the best, and you reap high profits in return for your innovations or, you know, your exceptional customer service. But what we see in the last decade is increasingly entrenched market power. That is, the firms that have high markups today are largely the same as those that will have high markups tomorrow. Your chance, if you are a high markup firm today, there's an 85% chance you will remain a high markup firm in your industry next year. Wow. Right? And that's 10 percentage points above the same statistics during the new economy era of the 90s, which was a more dynamic era. And so the concern is that despite our antitrust laws, what we're seeing is basically increasing dominance and increased entrenchment of the dominance of the market leaders in their industries. And that's bound, you know, to affect business dynamism. There's going to be, you know, what we see is the rise in market power is connected to a reduction in the share of young firms in output. And that is bound to weaken one major source of growth, which is creative destruction. Right? At least a quarter of U.S. growth reflects creative destruction. That is the entry of new firms, the growth of young firms, and the exit of old, less productive firms. And if you stifle that source of growth, you deprive yourself of a source of economic growth and good jobs and you know, income opportunities.
So as you mentioned there, what happened in the 90s, traditionally the big market dominators have been displaced by their competitors. If you look at what happened to the big telephone companies in the 90s, when it became clear that they own the infrastructure for new technology to evolve, monopolies were created, then they broke apart under pressure from competition, and the process ultimately led to more growth. Why do you expect this won't happen today as it did then?
So part of the answer lies in the entrenchment that I mentioned, right? The fact that it seems that the you know, the disruptors of yesterday are becoming the increasingly unchallenged incumbents of today. And that's why we think, you know, you have to strengthen antitrust frameworks to make sure that we keep, you know, a vibrant, open economy, and that, you know, smaller, younger firms that are trying to catch up and displace the major incumbents are on a level playing field with them. And so to give you an example, in the merger control area, what we find in our report is that when major dominant firms in their industries engage in mergers and acquisition, that is when they acquire a competitor, what you see is that other competitors, the third parties that are not part of this transaction, they take a hit to their growth rate of sales and their growth rate of R&D. That is, they get discouraged from innovating, keeping on innovating. And what's interesting is that this chilling effect, you know, of M&As of dominant firms is twice as large as the effect of regular M&As by non-dominant firms. That is, it's really the M&As by dominant firms that have this chilling effect on their competitors. And that is why, for example, in the report, we advocate, you know, strengthening merger control where relevant. And that, for example, may involve making sure that the competition authorities have all jurisdiction on all relevant cases, including the acquisition of nascent firms, nascent competitors to the dominant firms. That is, firms that are currently small but may get big and may threaten them down the road. And for example, Germany and Austria have recently introduced a threshold for their merger reviews that's based on the deal value, not just the turnover of the firm. And that's very important, for example, in the tech industry, where what you can sometimes see is that there's small firms that have very small turnover, but that's because they've not yet monetized, you know, their data and their customer base, but they already have very high market value, because the market already anticipates that, in fact, they're going to end up monetizing their base. And for example, then in those cases, the competition authorities should really have the ability to review these deals, which look small, so they fall under the standard, they fall below the standard turnover threshold above which competition authorities are to review cases. But there might still be important cases to review. And there's currently, you know, proposals, for example, in the US to make sure that such deals can be reviewed. And it's the same actually also in the European Union with the Digital Markets Act.
And you talked about innovation and how, you know, as market concentration increases, these big firms are less inclined to do innovation. But, you know, some people would argue that mergers and acquisitions are precisely how big firms innovate and diversify by acquiring these smaller companies that are actually doing new stuff. How do you impose tighter regulation on mergers without getting in the way of this healthy competition that you speak of?
Yeah, it's a very good question, right? The idea is not to stifle, you know, M&As. M&As can bring cost savings. They can bring efficiency gains. They can bring synergies that are going to enable the emerging firms to innovate further. And so that's not quite the idea. I think the idea is to make sure, though, that when such mergers do take place, they don't, you know, they're not entirely motivated by either the idea of killing the opponent or killing some of its potential innovations, as we've seen sometimes in the pharma industry, the so-called killer acquisitions. And also you want to make sure that dominant firms do not more broadly, right, try and acquire firms to kill nascent competition, right? It's not clear, you know, as actually at our event this morning, you know, Senator Amy Klobuchar flagged, it's not so clear why, and I think Tommaso Valetti in the other panel flagged it, it's not so clear why, you know, a dominant firm would really need to acquire a very small nascent firm to keep on innovating. Right. You may wonder why it cannot do it on its own. Does it really need to acquire a small startup to be able to keep on innovating? It's not quite clear. So that's what we need to be mindful of.
So there's a labor aspect to all this as well. How does this market concentration affect wages?
So it affects wages in two ways. One is when firms have power in product markets, typically their profits are higher. And if you have higher profits, what, you know, economists call super profits, that is the profits that go beyond a normal rate of return to capital, then mechanically this is going to reduce the share of total income that goes to workers, right? Because it inflates the share of income that goes to shareholders. So that is one. And in previous work, we had found that this rise in market power in product markets could account for about 10% of the overall decline in labor income shares that we've seen in advanced economies in the past two, three decades. So that's not a huge contribution. That's not the main driver of the decline in labor income shares, but that's still a meaningful driver. And the second way in which market power and dominant firms can affect wages and negatively is through their power in labor markets. And that, as we show in our new work, large firms hold power in labor markets. That is, they hold power onto wages, meaning that because they typically restrict workers' alternatives, they are able to pay them below their marginal revenue product of labor. Right. And we find that the large firms are, in fact, four times more able than small firms to pay you below your marginal product of labor. To give you an intuitive explanation for this, think, you know, you're working for very small firms and the small firms, you know, proposes to cut your wage by 10%. You know, you might think, well, there's thousands of other firms out there. Why should I accept that pay cut? Maybe let me look elsewhere. And if you start really looking elsewhere credibly, then your employer won't be able to cut your wage by 10%. But think, you know, if you have a decent job in a big firm in an industry where there's very few alternatives, or locally in your labor market, there's very few other big employers. If that same firm proposes to cut your wage by 10%, well, you might think twice. You might take the pay cut at the end of the day and think, look, you know, I don't have so many good alternatives. That's why competition in local market, competition among firms in local labor market is important to keep wages high. You want big firms to compete also among themselves. And these two phenomena, market power in product markets and market power in labor markets, combine to keep wages lower than they should otherwise be. And so to remedy that, you know, you need competition authorities to look into labor markets and input markets more generally to ensure that, for example, you know, there's no abuse of dominance by dominant employers in labor markets, or that mergers don't create excessive market power in local labor markets. And that's something that's been under the radar screen of competition authorities for a long time, and that we think needs to come back to the fore. And for example, maybe more in the US context, but there's some evidence that you know, one may need to enforce more forcefully prohibitions of no poaching pacts, you know, no poaching pacts between employers. And also there's some evidence from the late Alan Krueger and others that so-called non-compete clauses that are signed between a firm, an employer and its employee, have gone a bit too far, in the sense that you now see such clauses in the retail industry. You see that in fast food jobs. And there's no good reason why, you know, a fast food worker should have to sign a non-compete clause that prevents him or her from looking for another job in the fast food industry in their neighborhood.
For better pay.
Absolutely.
So what happens if we fail to address this scenario that you describe in this research, where market power, you know, market concentration continues to rise? How might it affect the economic recovery that people are so desperately hoping for?
Yeah, as we say in the blog that we published, you know, with our managing director, this rise in market power, this further rise in market power that could be due to the pandemic, is a cloud on the recovery. Right? It is not, of course, the number one factor that could be dragging the recovery, right? The first thing you want to think about when, you know, stimulating the economy right now is, one, vaccines; second, keeping fiscal policy accommodative; third, keeping monetary policy accommodative. So, of course, these are the first order issues right now. But, you know, a further rise in market power would just be a drag on the recovery at the time when, you know, we need tailwinds, we don't need headwinds, right? That is, it would hold back the recovery in investment, it would weaken innovation a bit more, and it would also hold back wage growth a bit more. So these would not be huge effect, but these would be headwinds at the time when we need to put basically as much as we can into this recovery that we're trying to nurture right now.
Romain Duval, Assistant Director in the IMF Research Department and a lead author of the new study on rising corporate market power. Thank you for sharing this timely research.
Thank you very much, Bruce. My pleasure.
You can read the full study and the blog on rising corporate market power at imf.org. You can also watch the webcast of the entire Brookings Institution event at brookings.edu. And look for other IMF podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. Please follow us if you like what you're hearing. You can also follow us on Twitter at IMF_podcast. Thanks for listening.